This is the very first episode of our SportsTech podcast. Here is Jarosław Handke
and Grzegorz Łagowski.
We would like to invite you to the pretty interesting conversation with the guy who calls himself as Global Connector. His name is Ryan McCumber.
Yeah, sometimes you meet a person that is well connected, but guess what? He is like real well connected. So we have heard a lot of interesting stories, thoughts on sports tech industry, but let's go.
Hello Ryan, and we are here with Grzegorz Łagowski and
Jarosław Handke, of course.
And our guest today is Ryan McCumber. Who actually Ryan McCumber is?
Thank you for having me today. So I am from New York. I've been working in sports tech for the past 4 years, and I mean, how much do you want me to talk about right now? Yeah. Talk everything about it? Okay, well, no, so first came to Poland 10 years ago. I was doing a project for Du Mobile, or for ERA. I can't always say that. For ERA, before it became T-Mobile. And I was then with Ernst & Young. Since then, I was recruited down to Australia to the KPMG office, and I headed up their telco media entertainment practice, and then in the management consulting space. And then I moved into sports tech about 3 or 4 years ago. We started in Australia. We did a massive project in the US with the NBA. And through that, I kind of moved into a global sports tech role.
So in general, do you consider yourself as a, you know, global sports consultant, or maybe you have any of your, you know, any of your region of the world is your favorite one?
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't necessarily call it a sports consultant. It's more the tech side. So it's more innovation. So it's innovation, that's affecting sports, media, and entertainment.
What brought you to the sports industry?
I just a love and a passion for sports. I've always loved sports. I've always been in the telco media entertainment sector. So within that, even in the US, we did some work in sports with the NHL and some other things. But it was always within the big four. Sport makes up a very small percentage of what we do. But when you start to overlay sports tech, the eyeballs start to open with the partnership, and people start to realize there's a lot more money involved in sports tech. As an example, if you're talking smart stadium, then we talk smart precinct, then we're talking smart city. Pretty quickly, it gets much bigger, and eyeballs, 5G is coming with telco. And once you start talking streaming on the phone, now we're talking Orange and T-Mobile, and these are all traditional clients of, you know, the big four. Where a sports club, Legia, for example, or whatever it may be, KPMG or PwC, yeah, it's nice. They might do the audit or tax for them, but it's not going to be a big major project. But the moment you start talking streaming, now it's a, could be a big project. So I've been in management consulting for the 18-year career, half the time with Ernst & Young and half the time with KPMG, and I resigned about a year and a half ago to work on my own.
So I do understand that the reason was actually that what you're doing right now is far much more sexy for you in terms of the projects you're having right now?
Yeah, well, within that KPMG role, Global Sports Tech, I was traveling around the world pretty much everywhere. We were running also a sports analytics conference everywhere and trying to push our projects, which are mostly analytics driven. Smart stadiums, we did a lot of work in smart stadiums. We did a lot of work on game scheduling. We do the NBA schedule, which is a massive project. But I started working a lot more with startups, and with a KPMG hat on, the startups, A, can't afford KPMG rates. And if they wanted to pay me, they wanted to pay me in equity. And within a KPMG hat, I can't really accept that. So while you can say it's sexier, you can say it's cooler, it's more the startup community as opposed to working with the big giant corporates.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned that 10 years ago you were involved in one project with ERA in Poland, company which now is called T-Mobile after rebranding. Mm-hmm. What are your general thoughts and insight about Polish telco industry 10 years ago and now? How would you, I know that at the moment currently you may not have the best knowledge how it works right now, but what are your general thoughts how it's changing here in Poland and globally?
Well, no, I definitely do now because I get a SIM card every time I come back. Look, it's not as advanced as some other places, whereas the fintech sector I think is. The telco sector from a retail customer experience perspective, it's still kind of behind. I mean, I go to the store, I have to get a ticket, I wait for a long time, It's just there's things that aren't they're happening much more smoother if I go to an AT&T store in New York City versus the Orange store here. I can go into a lot of detail, but I don't think this is really about the telco space. But yeah, look, it's still a long ways to go. I will say from the banking sector, I think that's more advanced and more leading. I don't think the telco sector necessarily is one of the leaders here within Europe or the world, at least from what I see.
However, I think this is a good place to mention that here on the Polish market, like the Orange team responsible mm-hmm. for managing Polish marketing products, they have developed a dedicated product called Orange Flex that actually works a bit like, let's call it Netflix kind of product. Mm-hmm. You don't have to sign a contract, but you just pay for it each month and you decide, mm-hmm. like, for what actually you are paying for. Like, you know, how speed, what's the speed for the internet and stuff like that.
Yeah. Look, I'm not familiar with that. As I said, I don't live here permanently, so I don't have those products, but I'll say, you know, products like that were all in Australia. We had all those. They were all launching OTT products similar to Netflix. They can't compete with Netflix because they don't have the critical mass and they don't, you know, at the end of the day, it's Amazon Prime. It's going to be Netflix and a few other players, Hulu and others that is just the big money and buying the content. And at the end of the day, content is king and the ability to make new content as Netflix can do with TV shows and producing those TV shows.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that there will be some time in the future when the big four companies will be pretty involved in the sports tech industry, that they will focus far much more on this particular?
100%. So if we talk OTT, and if I look at the UK market, let's use BT or Sky, they have the English Premier League rights. They're going to lose those pretty quickly. It's going to move to a global deal. So an Alibaba, a Amazon, potentially a ESPN ABC, but they're going to get squeezed out. And the amount of money is, it's
Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook's already doing it. Facebook, Amazon, they're already streaming sports. They're testing the waters.
Twitter,
but it's going to be a global deal. What I get at right now, everything's done on a country by country basis. Mm-hmm. Someone's going to come in and say, I want La Liga for the whole world. And there's no more TV now, so who cares about, there's still TV, but everything's streamed. So you don't need the cable in the ground. You don't need that satellite. It's the whole borders are disappearing. There is no more border. One of the startups I'm working pretty closely with, I haven't told other YouTube about this one before. It's a kind of a futuristic streaming play. I can't give too many of the secrets away, but so I'm here in Poland just last weekend, and there's a famous college football game on. And I go on the net, and I can't find it. And it's Alabama, the number one team in America for college football. I can't physically watch that game. So I go in my VPN, I try to get back to the US, and they're smarter now, they know that I'm on a VPN. They won't let me show up. I'm here, I literally would have paid $50 to watch it, and I couldn't watch it. And the whole thing goes back to rights, and Lagardère, you probably understand this, there's all these broadcast rights, someone has the rights to that college football in Poland, but they don't show it. And if it was there, I would have paid for it, and I would pay for it. And why can't I pay, you know, micropayments, well, $1 or $2 to watch it? It's just money they're leaving on the table. So we want to go back to the NCAA. It's not for all sports. I mean, for NFL, there's a Game Pass, so I can watch NFL sports.
Same works for NBA.
Yeah, for NBA, I have Game Pass, NFL, so I can watch all those, no problem. It's the college football or college sports, which are just as big. You know, in America, college sports are bigger than some of the Polish leagues. Mm-hmm. So it's, and there's people here in Europe that all went to college and they have a fan of their team and they want to watch it. So to me, it's kind of there's an opportunity there. And again, it goes back to that historical boundaries of how digital rights were sold, going back to the broadcasters. But there is no more broadcast. Now it's all streaming, and why wouldn't it be? So my, coming back to it, it's going to be the Alibabas, the Facebooks, Amazons of the world that are going to, one of them is going to come in and buy a global rights for Champions League or EPL. It won't be done country by country.
You mentioned OTT, but in general, technology influences how athletes train and compete, how fans engage and consume content, and how world-class venues are constructed. Mm-hmm. But which technologies are making the biggest impact for you?
So if we're talking just high-level technologies, it's artificial intelligence, it's IoT. There's a lot of different things within that, but 5G will play a role, but it hasn't really hit yet. But IoT is one example. There's a fantastic Polish startup.
You mean Internet of Things?
Internet of Things, yes. Internet of Things, I'll give you an example. So I also run a global sports conference called FIST. It stands for Future Innovation Sports Tech. We just had a large event. Greg, you're actually there in London. We had a large event at Chelsea Stamford Bridge, and we have a startup competition. And that startup competition is divided. We have three tracks, one focused on the fan and all fan experience, one track focused on athletes, high performance wearables. There's wearables now that people are coming like Catapult and Stats that all your soccer or football players are wearing in practice. And then one track on the gamer and esports. Anyway, what I'm getting at is the startup that won the competition actually came from Poznan, of all places. And it was a joint venture. It was a joint venture with a company in Sydney where I actually live, of all places. And people thought it was kind of just funny that, no, because my partner here is Polish. So. No, it wasn't a coincidence because I'm not a judge. So I wasn't a judge. I had nothing to do with it. But anyway, what this company does, they make smart gyms. And it goes back to Internet of Things. So they've taken some sensors and they can put those sensors on the gym equipment. And then that ties to an app. And once you go to the gym, it'll tell you how much you lifted last time. So maybe you had 30 kilos or 70 kilos and it tells you to go to 75 kilos. There's an artificial intelligence model in it that helps you train and it tells you when you should move up and how you're doing versus, you know, before. And it kind of helps you and it encourages you. It might send you a message that day. Hey, you got to go to the gym today. You get to the gym and all those different machines are all connected. And it's that Internet of Things that connects them all. So that's a good example of artificial intelligence with a sort of like a chatbot functionality and then kind of the machine learning that takes place within the app itself. The company is named Heavy Kinetic Machines, but they just rebranded to Solo Workout. Solo Workout. So you might be in a gym in 6 months from now, you might see a smart gym and you'll know that they got their start at the FIST conference in London.
And then they're saying about some areas for innovation in sports. Mm-hmm. Which area, in your opinion, still has much to be done, especially?
Let's break it to sports in general. The football world is definitely behind, say, the NBA. So, and then even...
Because you have been living for a long time in the USA, so... Well,
slow down.
Saying football.
Yeah,
you football. Mean soccer or football?
I mean soccer.
Okay.
So I meant soccer. I'm here, so I'll say the word football. So the football world is not as advanced as NBA or any of the American sports, really. The analytic was driven from baseball. You may have seen the movie Moneyball with Brad Pitt, but that was kind of the start of the revolution of applying analytics to sports. The NBA was a fast follower. NFL is kind of hit or miss. Some teams are very analytic driven. Some teams won't adopt to it. They're old school. Very similar to, so I'm talking American football, very similar to European football. There are definitely some teams that are more analytic driven. Some teams are not. There's a lot of startups that are emerging. But in general, the sport as a whole is light years behind what the NBA as a whole is in terms of using analytics and just predicting things. Now, that comes down to the sport side. If we then overlay that to fan and fan experience, again, you go to a football match in Europe and the fan experience is going to be light years behind what it's going to be in the U.S., and I'll give you an example. So again, the NBA, Sacramento Kings are one of the most advanced teams in the world. I do a lot of work with them. So they have an app that when you wake up in the morning, it pushes you a notification that says it's game day. Don't forget to bring your jersey, and it can be a smart jersey. The jersey is actually smart. I'll explain that in a second. And it's going to tell you it's going to have traffic today. On your way to the stadium, it might say, almost like what Uber does, hey, go to gate A instead of gate B because there's traffic. When you enter the stadium, you get a push notification that says, hey, we know you got here late. Here's a free beer on us, and we can reward that customer. We give you directions to the seat. So there's a thing called wayfinding that explains exactly where your seat is. It may say there's an activation. Maybe there's a new Spider-Man movie came out, and there's some augmented reality or VR activation. It might tell you where that is. You sit down in your seat and three things that are happening. So the whole entire stadium is connected. Everything from supply chain to food to ticketing. We know everyone who came in. So first of all, everything's a digital ticket. So let's even step back to basics. Right now, you still use paper tickets in some stadiums.
Most cases,
you can't trade the ticket. You have to physically hand the ticket to somebody else. The ticket in the U.S., stadiums have all gone to 100% digital. Mm-hmm. So you cannot get in if you have a hard ticket. Mm-hmm. And it causes people problems because some people don't. They didn't bring their phone and their phone's dead, but they're moving to this. Not every stadium is this way yet, but pushing everything to digital ticketing. Then there's the secondary market, the StubHubs of the world, SeatGeeks. Mm-hmm. We can tell you what seat is better, what seat has more sun, what seat is going to be better view. You can see a picture from that seat. All this stuff is coming, but it's not quite here yet in football in Europe. And I've done a lot of work with Chelsea in the redevelopment of their stadium. These are all things they want to do. And they want to make it more of a I hate to use the word, Disney-like experience. It's what they use. But how do we get fans to the stadium earlier to spend more money on food and beverage? How do we get them to stay later as opposed to right now a fan comes in, watches a game, he might get a beer at halftime, and then he leaves. How can we sell more things to them? Yeah. Going back to that Sacramento Kings example, it's a pretty scary example, but again, everything is connected. So at the end of the first quarter, if we haven't sold popcorn in a certain section, so let's say section 305, and every section has their quota, if it hasn't hit that quota, we will give a push notification to a family with a child, because we saw them come in, and we know that there's a child sitting in seat 33B. We'll send a push notification to the mother or father, free popcorn. We can then watch them get up out of their seat, go redeem their popcorn. So I've watched this from Australia. So I'm giving this demo in Australia. It's the daytime. It's work hours, but it's a nighttime NBA game in Sacramento. And we're watching on the big screen. We're getting a live demo. They say, look, we're going to send popcorn now to seat 33B. We see them redeem the coupon. We see them get out of their seat. We see the phone move because they have the app so we can track where they're walking to. They redeem the ticket. In the demo, we then move on to some other things. We come back 20 minutes later and it's happened every single time. They've sold 5 or 10 more popcorn. Because once another kid sees popcorn, he says, I want popcorn too. And somebody smells the popcorn and sees the popcorn and you see your next door neighbor eating it, you go buy popcorn yourself. Mm-hmm. And so they're actually, for every one they give away for free, they sell 5.
Well, you mentioned that for me, the most popular sports in the US are far much before the rest of the world. But if we can compare not only Europe to the US, but for example, Dubai or Australia, where you have lived and worked mm-hmm. for some years, mm-hmm. how does it look like in this part of the world?
Australia is very similar to Europe. First off, you can barely get a signal on your phone. The network doesn't work. You can't get Wi-Fi. You know, I'll use Wembley Stadium as an example. It's arguably the most famous football stadium. I mean, obviously there's San Siro, there's Real Stadium, but no, Wembley is UK's national team. I can't get internet inside the stadium. So if I can't get internet, I can't post things on social media. I can't take pictures. I can't get any data unless you have EE. And if you have EE, they have Wi-Fi, but you have to be an EE subscriber. I got a EE prepaid card and it doesn't work. So you have to physically have a subscription. So that fan experience of, you know, taking that video, taking that picture, posting it up to social media, all that stuff that kind of comes with the experience, or in the Sacramento Kings case, they push you replays and highlights and you can see everything. Another thing that's taking place in the US right now, Intel has all these 360 cameras in an NBA game. You can log in and you can watch from wherever you are. You can watch from those camera angles. And you can almost makes you feel like you're at the stadium. I'm going to sidetrack here a little bit. So the Golden State Warriors are building a brand new stadium, the Chase Center. I'm actually going to be out there in 2 weeks getting a tour of it. But one of my good friends is the head of digital. And this is 2 years ago they created this. So with the help of Philips, which is a proud European company, Philips light bulbs from the Netherlands, the Philips smart bulb. And in the Philippines, apparently there's the most Golden State Warriors fans per capita per country. In the Philippines. Yep. And they also apparently have a lot of smart homes. I would have never thought this, but they have all these smart homes that are being built. Now, most of those Filipino fans don't have enough income to ever fly to San Francisco and attend the Golden State Warriors game. So how do we bring that Golden State Warriors game experience to the Philippines? So this is a true story and this happens today. In your house, you have a smart home, you buy these smart light bulbs, you go on the website, and you log in and you can set what you want. So every time Steph Curry hits a three-pointer, your lights are going to blink 3 times. So before the game starts, your house kind of lights up blue and you know the game just started. And then every time Curry hits a three-pointer, your lights can blink. Now, it's whatever you want to be set for. If they win the game, the light can turn yellow. So you know, and you get this kind of stadium experience that the Golden State Warriors just won because the light just flicked yellow. And you can set it for whatever you want. It sounds kind of corny and odd, but it's pretty amazing. They're doing this and trialing it. Phillips picked the Warriors to do this trial with. It's still under trial. But literally, a goal is scored. So imagine you're a Legia fan and they score a goal, your house lights up red. Or the light bulbs all turn red.
I'm like, it all sounds amazing. Quietly honest, if I now consider, typical Polish fan attending any sports match, football match, volleyball match, whatever, all what you have said sounds a bit like science fiction.
Yeah, I believe it.
From your perspective as a sports tech advisor, what advices would you give to sports clubs that not necessarily have enough big budget to finance, this kind of, all big scope of innovation?
Yeah, so I'm actually going to be producing an article about this in a few days with my partners at Hype on don't be the next Kodak. The title of it, you don't want to be the next Kodak or the next Nokia. A lot of sports clubs in Europe just feel like they don't need the change. But if you don't innovate and if you're not adopting, you're going to lose that next generation of fans. And is that next generation, the millennials right now that care about digital, care about social media, they might not want to watch the whole game. They don't watch the highlights. There's that attention span, whether you're embedding esports to it. So part of the advice would be to embrace innovation, to maybe set up an innovation hub or lab, have startups come and work with you. A lot of startups will do work for free. I work with a basketball team here. It's in the second division, Polish basketball, called Ziki Warsaw, with Jiki Michael Warsaw. Ziki Warsaw. And I'm finding startups from around the world. We're doing things in the second division Polish league that the first division, Ekstraklasa, is not even doing. We're putting the games on Facebook Watch. We have an app for the fans. There's only 300 fans come to the game, but there's actually an app and they're getting sent some loyalty notifications. We're using analytics on the court itself, and all these startups are doing it for free. In my case, they're doing it because they want to enter either the basketball market or the US or the European market.
They need case studies.
And these are companies, one's from Australia, one's from Romania, one's from Greece. The one in Greece does analytics on football players. It's called Statathlon, and they won again to basketball. So we actually used this as a case study last year. Now they just did the FIBA World Championships with the Greek national team. So that case study got them there. So look, not everyone's gonna, you can only get free work for so long, but you need to adopt innovation and embrace it. And there's another angle I'm working with. Don't want to give it completely away, but there's sports clubs are now coming together to set up alliances around the world so they can share better practices and they can share some resources. They can understand what's working in La Liga and how do we bring it up here to Ekstraklasa and vice versa. But there's a lot of conferences and knowledge here, but it's out there. You need to adopt it.
Well, actually, it all sounds pretty impressive, but what do you think about the real time when these solutions may be implemented in a global scale to football clubs, to basketball clubs, and so on, all around the world? I would say, what is actually the deadline after which it may be too late for some clubs to gain more funds from the new generation?
I don't think there's a deadline. It's sooner than later. I mean, you don't want to wait too long. I'm working right now with the Belgian national team.
In what sports?
In football.
Oh, yeah.
So the Belgian national team in football. I'm working actually through my old office, the Capgemini office in Belgium. They actually reached out to me because of LinkedIn. So I was doing a lot of work in sports and they said they have potentially a sports project. But a great example here, again, this is Belgium, a small country. They just turned over their sponsorship a couple of years ago and they just rolled it over. So the last 10 years, the same contract with Jupiler Beer, with ING, they just renewed it. 10 years ago, they weren't the number one club in the world. They're now the number one football club in the world. Eden Hazard has social media following like crazy. And that ING logo on their kit, if somebody takes a picture of him and now it goes out on social media, onto Facebook, onto Twitter, and whatever, millions and millions of people are seeing that. There's a value to that. There are startups out there, two new companies, one's called Gum Gum and Hook It, that can do a valuation of all that social media valuation. And literally, I'm just going to make up numbers here. These aren't real, but we're going to ING saying, look, you're only paying us $8 million. The value of what you got is $45 million. And how do you go back to them? And the Belgium team is now realizing, you know, we need to innovate. They hired a gentleman from the telco sector, and they're going through a whole process right now of revamping how they do sponsorship. And I helped them talk to the Golden State. They talked to the Warriors. They talked to the New York Yankees. They made a bunch of calls all around to do some benchmarking, and now they realize that they got to do it differently because of social media and that value that social media brings there. And obviously within Lagardère, you guys are all over that, and you're across it as well.
Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, what's holding back sports tech adoption, like monetization?
Yeah, I don't think anything's holding it back. I think it's moving super fast everywhere around the world. And I wouldn't say, you know, obviously it's budgets and only so much that clubs can do.
What about risk aversion?
In football and in certain clubs, and again, I'll go back to American football, there's absolutely risk aversion. And there's an old way of doing things. And there's coaches that are in their old ways of thinking. And, you know, sometimes these ways are right, but other times they don't work. I mean, two great examples, the New England Patriots in American football are one of the most famous clubs. Their coach says they don't use any analytics. He does everything. Where the Philadelphia Eagles, my team, is all about analytics, and we actually just beat them in the Super Bowl. And they were unconventional. Things that you would never do on fourth down and something, we're going for it. And we're doing things different. The whole league has never done before, but it's all driven by analytics and percentages tell us, you know, it's better to do this. And it's changing. Now, on the flip side, sometimes you can go too far. You know, there's some sports have, or my baseball team is too analytics driven, and it backfires. To me, it's a mix of both. So it's that gut feel, and you still have that personal touch, and you have to be involved, as well as the analytics becomes a tool. It doesn't become a, you know, 100% guideline. And I'm just using analytics as an example. We're talking tech and innovation. I'm just using the example of, you know, on the field itself. I know Liverpool is pretty analytics driven, and so is Leicester. So if you look at the past Premier League, Champions League champions, Liverpool, and they actually, that comes from the Red Sox, and it goes back to Moneyball, and the whole thing just came full circle. If you saw the movie Moneyball with Brad Pitt, well, they bought the Red Sox, they became the most analytic team. At the end of that movie, Brad Pitt almost takes a job with the Red Sox. They go a different direction with another guy who's analytics driven. And then they bought Liverpool, and they embedded all those analytics over to Liverpool.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have been discussing rights holders, like sports organizations. Mm-hmm. Taking a look from another side, from startups' perspective, what advices do you have for startups aiming to strike venture capital funding, startups related to sports tech industry?
Yeah, so let's just say you have a great idea. I mean, first of all, you need to find some seed funding, whether that be from family, yourself, somewhere. You got to get it to a proof of concept or something. Then you have to find someone willing to do something with you. So Ziki Warsaw or other thing. There's a lot of people out there willing to try stuff, and you do a proof of concept for free, get it proven, and then you can take that and try to sell it somewhere. But the best way is to go through one of the accelerators, and there's a lot of accelerators out there. One of the best ones in Europe is LEAD, LEAD, which is run by the Adidas family. It's actually Adidas grandchildren. There's a group called Hype, which is fantastic. I do a lot of work with the Hype guys. They do some really good ones in Europe. Actually all over the world, Hype is. And they're starting to diversify. So we have a dedicated one on, or Hype has a dedicated one on esports. They just had a dedicated one on blockchain at NYU. So it was sports using blockchain. So it's all these startups. So if you have a blockchain idea, you can find out where there's a great accelerator in New York City. Maybe you should go apply for it. A lot of these accelerators come with funding as well. You have to give up a little bit of equity, but there's all the introductions that come out of it. A great one in esports. I know you're both across this, but we're setting one up at number one FC Cologne in the Bundesliga. But we also have partners like ESL, SK Gaming, and others, where as you come in as a startup, you're going to be doing a proof of concept with one of these partners. And when one of these partners, you know, if it's successful, they're going to sign a contract with you, and then your valuation just goes up significantly. So it's because of that accelerator you're getting those introductions. And I would look, you know, you got to think about what sport does it apply to, what accelerator is right for you. And some accelerators are remote, where you can show up two or three times over 3 months. Some accelerators are, you know, on-site full-time, and you have to go there, be there full-time, and, you know, leave your families or whatever you may have, but you may have to move to London for 3 months. It's not a bad thing.
And how many startups do you have in your portfolio, actually? Well, just let's imagine such a case. We have somebody who hears this podcast, there's a guy from a particular Polish club, for example, Ekstraklasa.
Yep.
And he is pretty open-minded and he would like to gain some knowledge from another side of the world in terms of some technology.
So I wear two hats. One is a company I have called Sports Tech AI, which has roughly 10, each startup and each agreement's different.
So I'm, startups, right?
Yeah, so I'm on the board of some. So some I have a board seat, some I'm just an advisor, some I just have an agreement in Europe for performance development and business development. So if I help them introduce them to Chelsea, I'll get rewarded, or if I help them raise capital. So each one is unique and different. But there's 10, you know, some I do more or some I do less. There's probably another 10 that I'm talking to on a regular basis. I might help them here or there, but I'm not actively with a contract. With those 10, I have active contracts where I have one day a month or one day a week. Each one's a little bit different of a commitment that I have to help them work with them on.
What's your favorite role then?
It's a good question. They're all different. I mean, the best ones are when you're getting paid on a retainer and you have a board seat and this and that. So the least favorite would be purely performance development, but that's also the easiest one for the startup to offer you. So a lot of the ones where I have that are more, let's say they're more mature startups in the US that are looking to enter the European market. They don't want to pay someone full time, so they pay me as an opportunistic. If I find a club that's interested, I can do an introduction. If it's successful, I'll get rewarded from it. So the board seat, it's the spectrum from left to right. So the furthest right is a lot more involved, and the furthest left is more of a light touch, so to say.
So your actual business model is that you are being paid at the side of right holder, right?
It varies. Okay. Sometimes I'm paid by the startup. Sometimes it's the rights holder paying the startup, and I take a commission. Okay. Sometimes it's the rights holder paying me, like in the Belgian case, the Belgian national team pays me.
For
consulting work. So I do both. I kind of play both sides of the fence. Always talking to clubs and leagues and then startups. So it's more, Sports Tech AI is more more startups. When I mentioned that portfolio, it's more startup driven.
Mm-hmm. And what's your development goals then? Like, what do you think the future will bring for Ryan McCumber?
Oh God, I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring for Ryan McCumber. I don't think that far ahead. Look, it's a great question, and from a management consulting, I should have a proper 3-year plan, 5-year plan, but it's moving so fast. And then the FIST conference. So part of my time is pushing FIST and making FIST bigger around the world. We're planning actually a conference potentially in Warsaw for next year. I'm talking to a conference in the Middle East. I'm talking to Dubai and Saudi Arabia. I want to do one in Brazil. I'm talking to between Rio and Sao Paulo. But that conference series allows me to meet all the speakers and all the people. So it's actually how I met Greg. So we had Greg speak at our London conference. Greg's an esports expert and he spoke at the London conference. And now I'm here and Greg's helped me out with other things. So it allows me to build up that network. I can pretty much call any speaker in the world. So if the London conference, I called up to Liverpool, they want to speak, or you know, guys from Chelsea, and I'm calling them to speak at a conference. I'm not calling them to sell them something. And then when they speak at the conference, we have a VIP speaker dinner the night before. You get to meet them all. You have some drinks. And then I can say, oh, by the way, you know, I have this one startup. Are you interested to learn more? And once you get to know them, so it's a great way to build the network and then to be that quote-unquote connector. And that's kind of how I see myself, as kind of that global connector. And then more importantly, it's the global basis that I bring to it. A lot of startups in Europe don't really need help within Europe. Having said that, if you're from Poland, you might need help to get down to La Liga. But, you know, if you're in Madrid and you probably don't need help within the football world, but where you do need help when you want to switch over to basketball and you want to come to the NBA, you want to go down to Australia for rugby or for cricket. So the beauty and the value that I bring is that network and those connections in all the continents, including China. I just actually had a call today with a startup from Slovenia. I'll give them a little plug. It's called Fan360. But it's all about football and sports, and they're about to announce, I can probably say it right now, this is going to be announced tomorrow, Buffon, Gianfranco Buffon, the goalie from Italy, famous Italian goalie. The
Buffon?
Buffon, how do you say it?
Buffon.
Yes. So he just signed on to be one of the co-owners, and it's going to be announced tomorrow in the press, and they have a big press conference tomorrow, but he's behind this app, and he's helping to push it. It's all for fans, and he needs help. It's football only. But
it's kind of a credibility. It gives credibility.
Yeah. So as your startup, you want to, if you can get on to those, you know, one famous athlete to then come on board, give him 20% equity, but then he becomes a spokesperson and he comes on board, maybe makes a commercial and whatever it may be. And a lot of those athletes, so a whole nother piece to this is life after sport for the athletes. So the athletes, as they're about to retire, they're looking for the next thing to do. And in Australia, I did a lot of work on this, where you don't want those athletes to invest in steakhouses or a strip bar or whatever it may be, which they naturally enjoy, but they're all starting to look at sports tech. And they're looking at sports tech from threefold. And in the NBA, all the players are starting to invest, and they all want to go to San Francisco and get involved in the Silicon Valley thing. But they can invest. They can also become a spokesperson. They can also just try it. You know, a lot of times they needed somebody to try the product. So getting those athletes, it can be, you know, everything up from Lewandowski to some other play on Legia. But you get them to get involved, and they're all looking to get involved. This is like a cool thing. It's something that's interesting to them and something they understand. Kind of got sidetracked here a little bit, but back to Fan 360. On the call I had today, he really wants to enter China. He doesn't know anyone in China. So I have three companies I'm a part of. There's actually one is partially owned by the Dutch. I think he was a striker, Wesley Sneijder.
Yeah.
I think he's maybe retired now, but he's a co-owner. He's a co-owner of this company in China. So I just had a call with them the other day, and what they want to do is find the best football products, and they want to be their licensee or franchise. They want to own it in China and distribute all around China. So I'm going to connect this guy tomorrow.
It's a win-win relation.
It's a win-win. So I'm able to connect this guy to Wesley Sneijder's company, and they might be their Chinese representative, and I'll take a cut of everything that gets sold. But it's that, you know, knowing that China market, that the value that I bring.
It's all about the networking.
It's networking. And as I said, I view myself as a global connector.
I think it can be a title of our podcast. It's all about networking.
Yeah.
Like during your conferences, you for sure have exchanged a lot of knowledge and experience with speakers from all around the world. So how much, in your opinion, do the global trends like global warming, zero waste strategy, or data protection influence sports tech today?
It's a great question. So green is a big topic, and all the stadiums are really becoming very green. Amsterdam Arena, now it's called the Johan Cruyff Arena, if I'm pronouncing his name right.
Yeah.
That's one of the most advanced for energy. They actually created a separate energy company from all the energy they produce in the stadium, and everything's about green. And Holland as a country is a very green country, but they went to, you know, from bike sharing to all kinds of stuff.
Very green country.
Yeah, but it's that stadium is looked upon in the world, including the U.S., as, you know, a beacon of being very green. Philadelphia Stadium in the U.S. is all solar energy, and everything's run by solar. So yeah, it's a big topic.
But can you see such a trend, an example, when pitching some startups to venture capital?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, the Amsterdam Arena just had an innovation competition, and there were three pillars. One was, how can we make a greatest fan experience from the moment they wake up till they go to the game and come back home? So it was all about that journey. And, you know, getting a free tube ride or getting a free train, everything connected. Another pillar was all about green and green energy. And it was, do you have any ideas to make the stadium smarter, from a green perspective? Data protection, obviously with GDPR, a big issue for the US startups that have apps and other things. It's very different over here on how you can apply it. That Sacramento Kings example that I gave you, that might not work here. From a protection industry. Yeah. So they all have to be aware of it. There's a lot of things happening in the U.S. and some things I think I just read the other day. I think it might have been Man City. They implemented facial recognition and they had to kill it because too many people were complaining of, you know, somebody watching me and knowing where I am.
Yeah.
So sometimes it can go too far, but you know, the world's moving so fast and, you know, we'll see. Of all places, when I was in San Fran last time, I was shocked to hear that the city itself has banned facial recognition. And you would think if anywhere is going to have it, it would be San Francisco. But the government, the mayor, and they've banned it all in all the government buildings. Yet, you know, you walk into Facebook, it's all going to be facial recognition. They know everyone there. While we're on facial recognition, I'll give another plug to my startups. It's called Edison AI. It's out of India, of all places. I met the guy at my conference. He approached me 2 years in a row. I just didn't have bandwidth for him the first time. And he finally had something. In the beginning, he really didn't. But then he had it. They use facial recognition, and his first product was a soccer product. He measures all the players from the broadcast using their face, he can then put stats and overlay it on the TV or an OTT product above their head. So, for example,
just like playing a video game.
And you can see above their head, and we can start to put maybe their how far they ran. You can start to put betting odds. You can put whatever you want. So he just got accepted into the Comcast Accelerator. If you don't know Comcast, they own NBC Sports, which is one of the biggest sports companies. They also just bought Sky. So you're probably all familiar with Sky in Poland. So Comcast just bought Sky. So within NBC Sports, they have all the rights to golf. And one of the trials they're doing is we can understand the facial recognition of the golfer. We can then identify the club that he just used. And let's say it's Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson, whatever it is. We can see that club on the overlay. You can click on it and say, I want to know more about that Callaway. And then you can go buy the club. So it kind of brings it into a merchandising of seeing what happens and overlaying that commerce and that click through. Now, it doesn't work on traditional broadcast. It has to be on OTT, but it's that OTT layer. And all the new cable boxes for Comcast that are all coming out now are all over the top. They're all online. So all the new cable in the U.S. will have this capability. We're also doing it for 3-on-3 basketball is a big thing now. There was just a tournament going back to Tajiki. Michael just ran a big tournament here in Warsaw. We had one of the first 3-on-3 tournaments. A lot of people don't know who the players are at this, but 3-on-3 basketball is picking up. So we didn't quite get it ready for this year. We'll have it for next year. We're using that same functionality Edison AI has. We'll do the facial recognition, and then we can put some details above you of the backstory. Now click on here. You can say where this person came from, what they did, who they played for. Now, did they play in college in America? Did they play in the NCAA? Maybe he played in the NBA. You can start to tell that backstory of who that person is and bring him more to life.
So it's pretty useful both for fans and analytics, right?
This is more for fans, but there's definitely an analytics version. His product he's pushing on the fan side. I know of another product in Australia that's pushing it more towards the high performance side to understand how fast they're running or what they're doing.
So when talking to some accelerators like mentioned Hype, what is your take on valuation process of sports tech startups? Like how do you judge whether a startup has the potential to grow or not necessarily?
Look, I mean, valuations are what they are. Whenever I look at a startup, I want to see, who did the valuation? Who was behind it? Was it a KPMG, a PwC, or Deloitte? Have they put their stamp on it? What's it being valued at? A lot of startups don't have revenue coming in the door, but that valuation is a mix of professionalism, accuracy, and also a thumb in the air of what you think it's worth and how do you value it. And like, I'm not an expert on it by all means, but that's one of the first things I look at was, who actually did this. And I don't, from a advice perspective, I would bring in a professional audit firm and have someone who's highly experienced, and that's where the accelerators come into play. And they can help out with that and introduce you to the right people that can help with that.
One off topic, you have mentioned Michael when you have been describing GQ Warsaw. Michael, I mean the owner of GQ Warsaw, this will be another guest of our podcast.
Fantastic.
Therefore, for sure, our listeners will learn more about GQ Warsaw.
And your collaboration with.
Yeah, I'm the chief innovation officer of GQ Warsaw.
Another position. Yes. Collector.
I'm like, your collaboration is literally amazing. Like,
thank you.
Thinking about second division basketball club here in Poland, cooperating with startups all around the world. It's hard to believe. It's happening.
Yeah. And like I said, startups from Australia, Romania, and India are doing work for a Polish second division basketball team. Just think about that for a second.
I remember I attended your conference that was taking place in London at Chelsea Stadium. And I remember that, there was like a lot of people from all around the world, all top minds. And, there was this contest for startups. And the main prize, to cooperate with GQ Warsaw.
Yes.
It's big.
We offered that to them. So obviously, the heavy kinetic machines, that doesn't really apply, but that was one, I don't want to say the main prize. The main prize is free sponsorship at other events, but one of the prizes was a free trial with GQ Warsaw, if you want to.
And actually, what about the rate of, how many clubs have already got in touch with you in terms of collaboration? For example, the clubs like GQ Warsaw and Global.
No, not really. They don't necessarily. I mean, GQ. I was introduced to a friend. It was actually at age 15. We had a gallery opening, and one of my friends said, "I have a friend that runs a basketball team. You should meet him." But no, it's not like clubs are calling on my door left and right. It's more me talking to them, opportunistic. If here's things they need to do. It's not first and forefront on these clubs' minds to start to do innovation, but when they do, you can always call me and I'm more than happy to help. And it's not just me. I have a partner in London and a partner in San Francisco as well. We all operate independently, but we kind of work very closely together. And you know, Sam in London. Yeah. I want to do you have more questions? I have a couple of things I want to talk about.
We have a number of questions.
Okay.
Of course.
Yeah.
Go.
Well, I know that this is more of a fintech traditional podcast.
Actually, this is exactly something I wanted to switch into. Actually,
yep.
Yeah, you mentioned that there are two, there are two companies, like, or more even startups, like DraftHedge.com, and the second one is PropSwap.
Yep.
If you can explain something more about the...
Yeah, so let me just even step back for the audience here who doesn't realize that gambling has been illegal in America from the beginning of time, unless you're in Las Vegas. So part of the allure of Las Vegas was, as a person myself, I can go there and I can gamble. Otherwise, it's done on the black market. Don't get me wrong, we all still gamble in New York City, but it's done illegally with the mafia, basically. And you might get paid, you may not get paid. So anyway, legalized gambling just happens in America. And only in the state of New Jersey, Pennsylvania, a few others. So it's going to be going state by state. But it's a massive, massive market. Obviously, the U.S. is a big country, very wealthy country, and we all did gamble, but it was done on the black market. So now it's going to be commercialized. And if you think about the regular markets, the stock market, and this is the fintech, so we understand that the U.S. market is probably the most advanced on secondary markets. You know, you have the NASDAQ, you have all kinds of commodities. Things are always being traded, and there's always a buyer and a seller. You can do a future, you can do a swap, everything you do in stocks. Why can't we apply that to sports? So Wesley Herr, a gentleman from Philadelphia, it's one of the startups I'm a part of, he was actually just in Cologne last week at the Hype Accelerator. He created this market of how do we use fantasy score as the proxy. So if you're a company, you have your reports out, there's your 10K, but there's a fantasy score. And in fantasy football, whatever sport is, you can use soccer in Europe, there's a fantasy score. In NBA, there's a score to that player. Why can't I? So first of all, fantasy sports in America became huge. You know, it was kind of the start of it. So for American football, I'm a part of a fantasy league. I have my own team and I watch the NFL games. I want my players to do well and I'm playing against somebody else and I have a winner and a loser. So it makes me to watch more games. But when that fantasy game is over, it ends. I either won or I lost. Mm-hmm. When you place a bet, you win or you lose and it's over. But why can't we treat sports like the stock market where I can own a portfolio of players? I can own Messi, Ronaldo, and I bought them at a certain price, and I may want to sell them. And if you have a buyer and a seller, you've just created a commodity and you created a market. And somebody's willing to buy if somebody's willing to sell. And then on top of that, you can put some hedging, some futures. You can start to create a full market. So Wes actually just had a meeting yesterday with the NASDAQ, and they want to invest in this and basically create, you know, whether it be oil, corn, there's markets for everything. So there's always buyers and a seller, and if there's a price you can measure it on, why not? And it's basically betting, but you're betting on the future of that athlete. And somebody today...
It's kind of a fan ownership.
It's a bit. There was another company, it didn't work, where the actual player put his career. He is, as an entity, became a startup. And he raised capital where people bought his futures for his career. Mm. So if he signed a Medicare contract, you'll have to pay them back just like shareholders. So him as a player was a startup.
Where did it happen?
In the U.S. Yeah. A couple of football players did it. Mm-hmm. So football players did it, but it didn't quite pick up. But this is, the players don't have to be involved. We're creating a market. Again, now this is a fantasy value. You can get the players involved, but now you can start buying and selling. So he's raising capital now. The product doesn't exist yet, but it works. We've tested it. He's actually at Princeton University. They're using this as a class. They're using his product to teach the stock market. So they're showing it and they're kind of gamify it because everyone understands sports. Not everyone understands stocks. Mm. Not everyone understands, you know, why, how is a company here? What, but everyone understands.
Of course.
Messi's playing well or Messi's not playing well and it's going up or down.
International language.
Exactly.
Actually, I heard about a similar project in crypto, like crypto, gambling and sports. So I think this is the direction that may be followed by another startup.
Yeah, so I'll just the crypto, going back to the Sacramento Kings, you can buy your ticket with crypto. You can buy food in the stadium with crypto. It's all through a company called BitPay. It allows you to pay with crypto in this. And it's all, the whole West Coast is, people are paying inside the stadium with crypto. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of shady things with crypto. There's a lot of these things, funds don't work or not going to work, but, you know, it's the future. Now that's way beyond anything that's going on in Europe in football. Believe me, you can't pay with crypto at Legia here. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you can. I'd be surprised. Maybe you can. I might say, okay, I disagree. I didn't realize. But coming back to, that's Draft Hedge. Mm. Prop Swap, going back to legalized betting now. Now, people are placing these bets. And let's say I placed a bet for $25,000 that the Eagles are going to win the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is not until January. And let's say that I realize 1 month down, hey, I don't like the bet anymore, or I need cash. I wish I could sell that bet. Well, it creates a secondary market for that bet. And now someone might want to buy it. So you put it up there onto like a in Amazon and I want to sell this and someone then wants to buy it. And you're now selling and trading your bets in this one kind of marketplace of buying and selling bets that occurred. And there's always someone that wants to double down. There's always someone that wants to get out. There's that whole market. So it's a secondary market for betting, which if I come back to ticketing, a company called StubHub revolutionized the ticketing market in the US, that secondary market. So again, it was called scalping in the U.S. If you owned a ticket, you couldn't resell it. It was considered illegal. But people.
What about the legal perspective of prop swap?
Yeah, it's completely legalized. It's legalized. Again, only in the states where betting is legal.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can resell it. Not a problem. And it's passed in like in New Jersey right now where they're
like a bet on a bet.
It's a bet on a bet.
So then probably there can be done bet on a bet on a bet on a bet.
It can be 20 times. You can just keep selling it if someone wants to buy it. I mean, in the mortgage, there are secondary markets right now where, I mean, people buy the mortgage and it's sold and resold and refinanced and people are rebuying it all the time in those markets. So on Wall Street, there's those secondary markets that occur on everything. And there's always someone looking to be more conservative and somebody looking to be more risk. And some people are more bullish and some people are more bearish. And it's just happening. So that's prop swap. Again, just getting off the ground and it's there. But once the whole entire U.S. market is all gambling, you know, there will be a market for it. They won't make as much money as the people selling the actual original tickets, but there'll be a market for it.
Yeah, actually, we are slowly moving into the end of our podcast. So okay. At the end, maybe Greg would also have a question or two. I would like to ask you about your view on the Polish market in terms of sports tech. You're traveling all around the world and you're meeting dozens of people from different industries. How do you assess the Polish sports tech market, if we may?
Does it exist?
Exactly.
Or not?
Exactly.
Well, it absolutely exists because the winner of FIS London came from Poland. So 100% it exists.
From Poznan, right?
From Poznan, yeah. Look, I've come across, there's definitely some startups here. I just had a good meeting yesterday with Legia and talked about some things here. If it doesn't exist, it's going to exist soon. Part of what we want to do with FIST is to encourage that innovation. There's a lot of startups coming in Poland. Is it like Berlin? No. Is it like London? No. But the beauty of Poland is it's a great country for developing, for software. It's cheaper labor, but there are a lot of software development goes on here. And with that software development, there's no reason why the startups can't come with it and can't apply to sport. I'd probably say the first generation is applying more to fintech, and we're in an office of a fintech place. And Poland is known for its fintech. Even in Australia, the KPMG partners in the banking sector made a few trips here to Poland and
to learn how we work
learn what was going on, and they would come back shocked. I mean, how far behind Australia was. I don't pay much attention to the fintech other than, you know, my credit cards and stuff like that, but I can't give you real examples. but it's coming, and I'm pretty sure that it's going to be here. That company, Fan 360, I just mentioned, that comes from Slovenia, so it's just next door, and no one's going to say that's more advanced than Poland. So I think Poland has a massive future. I think there's a big market, and I think it's, you know, there's going to be a sports tech market here. And if not, for those on the listening, create one. I'll kind of leave it at that, actually.
That sounds optimistic.
Yeah. No, I'm positive. And I want to do a conference here. And if it's not the conference I'm going to do here, if it's not, we want to identify Polish startups, but we also want to bring the startups elsewhere to apply to the Polish market. You know, bring in the companies from Australia. Yeah. And have them, you know, try to sell stuff here. But a lot of it, you know, when these startups, if I own a football club in Extra Klasa right now, you know, when you deal with these startups, it's not that much expensive. You know, like I said, you can be putting in an app pretty cheaply. You can start to do loyalty programs. You can do push notifications. It doesn't cost much. It's more time and effort than it is dollars.
Yeah, so I think we can slowly come to the end. Well, actually, it's still not official, but we may actually mention about it that next year in the spring, you're about to organize...
Not official, we want to. Yeah. So it's in the plan.
Yeah.
We don't know date or time or venue, but we're having some discussions.
In case anyone is interested, where to search for any information?
Yeah, you can go to www.fistglobalseries.com. But the best thing probably is just to find me on LinkedIn, Ryan McCumber. I don't know if there's, so it's R-Y-A-N and then McCumber, M-C-C-U-M-B-E-R.
Like the end of cucumber.
Exactly. Exactly.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah, so alternatively, somebody may also try to type in Google, like, global connector, and then the result will be Marianne McCumber from
LinkedIn. Potentially. Potentially.
All right, Ryan. So it was great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Dziękuję. Dziękuję także. It was a pleasure to have this podcast with you.
Great.
And then, you know, I hope that...
We'll be back on here in the spring to promote FIST.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Excellent. Thank you.
See you soon in Poland. Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you.